I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 5:03 p.m. on Wednesday, February 20th, 2020. Present today, we've got Representative LeBon. Representative Tilton, I believe, is online. Representative Tilton, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Feel free to jump right in, too, if you've got any questions for any of our testifiers. We've got Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Johnston, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Merrick, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, if folks here in the audience could please mute their cell phones. This evening, we will be hearing public testimony on House Bill 205, the FY21 operating budget, and also House Bill 206, which is the FY21 mental health budget. And at this meeting, we will be taking testimony in Fairbanks from now until 6:30 p.m. And then we will move over to Homer, Kenai, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Mat-Su, and Seward. And we'll be taking testimony from those locations from 6:45 till 8 p.m. We'll be taking calls from the off-nets as well. And I'll take those in order from the folks who have called in the earliest and so forth. So also a reminder, please sign in at your LIO or call in 30 minutes prior to the end of the allotted time, just to get you on the list. And we would ask that folks limit their testimony to 2 minutes. We want to allow enough time for others to testify. We also ask all the off-net callers to please hang up after your testimony, to keep as many lines as possible open for other callers. And testifiers can continue to access the meeting on your computer, and you can do so by either going to akleg.gov. Again, that's akleg.gov. And from there, you'd click on the Live Now button. And the hearing is also, I believe, looks like it's also televised on Gavel to Gavel. Let's see, folks might want to have a pen and paper here if you're calling in. And we have 3 numbers for off-net callers. For those callers outside of Anchorage and Juneau, please use 844-586-9085. Again, for those calling outside the Anchorage and Juneau areas, please call 844-586-9085. And if you are in the Anchorage area, you can call 563-9085. Again, if you're in Anchorage, that's 563-9085. And then if you're in Juneau in the southeast, you can call in at 586-9085. Again, that's 586-9085. And the last announcement, if you would like to provide written testimony, you may submit that to the House Finance Committee at the following email address, and that's housefinance, no spaces, housefinance at akleg.gov. Again, housefinance@akleg.gov. And we'll be accepting emails through Wednesday, next Wednesday, 1 p.m. That's February 26th. And so with that, we will start off with our first location, and that is Fairbanks. And it looks like we have 2 people on the line in Fairbanks. We've got 3 people in the room here. We have 3 people calling in from the off nets, one from Kenai and one from Barrow. And so a fairly short list for now. So we'll go ahead and start with Garrett Armstrong in Fairbanks. Can you hear us okay? And if you could put yourself on the record, your name and your affiliation.
Hello, is the microphone on?
Yes, we can hear you just fine, Garrett.
Oh, very good, sorry. So my name is Garrett Armstrong. I'm politically unaffiliated. I'm a resident of District 5. Representative Wool is my representative. I'm, just for background, I'm a public school teacher, fairly new in the career. Born and raised in Fairbanks. I went to my master's in education at UAF, but I'm here representing myself today. I just have very broad concerns about the budget right now, and some things I've heard back and forth about upwards of $30 million being cut from education statewide. I'm really concerned for that, being a fairly new career teacher, because often early year teachers are the ones that are pink slipped first. And I think that's really disheartening for those of us, especially those of us here in Alaska, that want to be teachers educating our youth here in the state, to feel that our jobs are at risk every springtime because we're not tenured. I think that's also really something for the school communities, for the students who are afraid that they may not see their teachers again in the following fall, for parents, and for the community as a whole. I'm also concerned about UAF being my alma mater. I feel like it should be funded more fully because living here in Fairbanks again, I can see how the decline is affecting not just the university, but the community as a whole. So I strongly encourage full funding or as much funding as possible for both the public school systems as well as for the university system. Thank you. That's all.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Armstrong. Do you have any questions of the committee? I don't see any, so we'll move to the other person there at the Fairbanks LIO, that's Susan Henricks.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my testimony. My name is Susan Henricks. I'm not affiliated with any organization at this point. I am a retired person from have worked at the University of Alaska Fairbanks for over 30 years. Three of my children graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I have broad concerns about the budget. I would very much like to see a reasonable level of public services in general be funded. I am more than willing to pay taxes or to have a smaller dividend if that's necessary to fund those things. However, I'm here to speak specifically here on behalf of the University of Alaska and the University of Alaska Fairbanks. As you know, the university entered into a compact with Governor Dunleavy. I want to say that while that compact averted disaster, and I fully understand why it was entered into, it's not an adequate level of funding for the university. It will result in very significant changes in the university's ability to serve the state well, to garner large amounts of federal funding, provide the extra help and assistance that lower income and academically challenged students need, a whole range of things. It's going to be much, much more difficult for the university to serve the many students statewide that it currently serves. Unlike many universities across the country, the University of Alaska Fairbanks has the opportunity to increase its enrollment by improving retention, by reaching out more to people who live in locations that are not currently close to a university location, reaching out to people who may not see themselves as attending college. There are a lot of reasons to give University of Alaska Fairbanks a better, more robust level of funding. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Henricks. Do we have any questions from the committee? I would like to note that we do have a couple of legislators with us. First of all, we were joined by Representative Knopp earlier, and we do have Representatives Grier Hopkins and Steve Thompson, both in the audience with us. So thank you for joining us. And so next up, we will move. So that's everybody at the Fairbanks LIO. We will now move over to the room here in Juneau and then to the off-nets. So with that, we have Austin Brown. Austin, if you could put yourself on the record, your name and your affiliation.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Austin Brown. I'm currently unaffiliated. I am here to represent the Fairbanks Rescue Mission. I live in North Pole and have been a resident of the North Star Borough since 1989. I've been employed for the last 20 years with the Fairbanks Rescue Mission. The traumatic environment in which I was raised in caused periodic bouts of homelessness for my immediate family. I came out of poverty and have been homeless in adulthood. My family received emergency lodging through what we now refer to as couch surfing with kind and compassionate extended family and the AWARE shelter here in Juneau. Safe havens were integral components in our overcoming the traumas associated with substance dependencies and post-traumatic stress disorder. My father was a World War II veteran who struggled with complex PTSD until his passing. As the interim CEO of the Fairbanks Rescue Mission, I'm here to ask you to advocate for retaining the full amounts of the Basic Homeless Assistance Program funding. The reduction of the homeless assistance program in the state budget will devastate the established safety net in Fairbanks. We will likely have to eliminate programs and services to survive these cuts. It is expected that these evidence-based best practice programs are eliminated. Homelessness in Fairbanks will be prolonged, and daily numbers of people experiencing a housing crisis will grow further, thereby overwhelming local services. Allowing this band of funding to continue brings with it continued collaborations with community stakeholders, assessing needs and providing ready access to food, shelter, clothing, and programs designed with long-term sustainability in mind is a distinct asset to our community. Thank you for your willingness to hear my story, our story, and the honor of advocating for our most vulnerable population.
Thank you. We've got a question, Representative Johnston.
Yes, through the chair. We are balancing some pretty heavy concerns here for in the budget, and my question to you, and I posed this last night, there's the collective good that you do and the collective good from the appropriation to homelessness. And with your population, where should we emphasize? Should we emphasize on the collective good that we can help with assisting in homelessness, or is it more important that we provide a bigger dividend for the population?
Boy, with my role, I would say assisting the homelessness. I believe that if we do allow for these types of cuts to continue, that it will result in additional incarcerations for the homeless population. I think this will continue to be an extended burden upon the community, like the penal institutions and Alaska Psychiatric Institute. These are the types of services which we provide much beyond an emergency shelter.
Thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious how the Fairbanks Rescue Mission receives its funding. Do you have fundraisers, and do you receive a percentage of your total from local donations?
Yes, most certainly. We have a support base of about 1,200 individuals and organizations in the community. We have three veteran programs which we offer through the Rescue Mission. We have a recycling program through the borough. We have a Mental Health Trust Authority giving us some resources for rapid rehousing. Yeah, so we've got quite a few. We recently absorbed Habitat for Humanities in the Fairbanks area, so we have all of their holdings, and we're developing some tiny homes for sustainable housing.
One quick follow-up.
Follow-up?
If there was a need to reduce the amount of state services, how would you think it would be you would go about asking the community for picking up the slack?
Yeah, and we already have done this, incidentally. We've been on several of the radio stations, as well as we were last year when we suffered a $58,000 budget cut. We were on quite a few different platforms in the community. And I will say that the community has been very kind to us, and they frankly did make that up for us. So now we would be going to them, and we are going for this additional cut. And so we are tugging at their heartstrings in the hopes that they will respond. So I'm looking forward to our return to Fairbanks to give some update in terms of the outcome of this time here.
Yeah. Thank you for your attendance here, and thanks for answering the questions.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Next up in the room here, we have Brenda McFarland, and then after that, Matthew Carrick. Brenda? And if you can also put your name and your affiliation on the record.
So my name is Brenda McFarland, and I'm unaffiliated.
Thank you.
So I've been working at the Fairbanks Rescue Mission as well for over 5 years. And my family moved to Fairbanks in 1997. And we stayed with the uncle until we had enough funds to move into housing. And because of the safety net that this family member provided for us, we were able, my parents at the time, I was 13, but my parents were able to find jobs, buy a home, and really prosper in Fairbanks. And all three of us children went to UAF and UAA and got bachelor's degrees, and we decided to stay in Fairbanks and work and raise families. But the people that we work with at the rescue mission, they don't have that safety net. They've burned through their resources. No one wants to come to a rescue mission, so it's not their first place, and they've burned through their relationships as well. And so we're asking, you know, we've done our best to be frugal with the funds that we receive. We try to bring in self-generated income through the recycling center, and we have fundraisers, and we keep asking the community for more and more. And at the same time, a lot of our community are working at the university, and they don't know whether they're going to have a job and other places that might continue to be affected by the cuts, like the hospital. And so the likelihood that they can keep giving at the same levels and still have that safety net for themselves is decreasing. And so we just want to express that we know that homelessness in communities are not just the shelter's problems, that it's a community issue, it's a Fairbanks issue, it's a state issue, it's all of our issues. And so just to say shelter solve this just doesn't work. And we don't receive any funding from the city to help. And so we just know that this funding has to come from somewhere. I think the last place it should come from is homeless assistance, because I know people that work in the ER, they are burdened to the max already. If someone can't come sleep at the shelter, the police and the ER are dealing with them all night. And the amount of money that costs the state is way more than it costs to give to shelters. And it would just exponentially increase the costs across the board. As many of you know that are from Fairbanks, our city police are at a breaking point already. They're not social workers. Tragic things happen when they're being asked to be social workers all the time with people in mental crisis. We need safe places where people can come. And so I just thank you for your time, and I urge you to advocate for a fully funded homeless assistance program.
Thank you, Ms. McFarland. Do we have any questions? Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for coming out tonight and all the great work you do at the homeless shelter.
Thank you.
It's noble work, and I'm glad you guys do it. A lot of references to the homeless assistance program. So, and we talked about it last night. It went from, I believe, 7.8 million to 7.3. It was cut, and now it's restored to 7.3, a shortfall of $500,000. And the chairman last night spoke to the mental health budget. Could you, just for my purposes and for people listening and in the room, can you clarify if the mental health budget brings the 7.3 up to 7.8 or perhaps more? And I was unclear on that yesterday.
It was 7.8, and then in the governor's proposed budget it was 7.3, so that was the reduction of the 500,000. And the mental health board recommended that it be 8.15 to leverage the funds that they also have, and so that was their recommendation. And so in the mental health budget that was rolled out yesterday, 8.15 was included according to the mental health board's recommendation. So it is restored.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just so I understand it, and we can talk about it later, but so was the mental health budget there last year as well at the same level, or is this above and beyond to make up for the gap in the UGF?
This is above and beyond.
Thank you.
So it was 7.8, now 8.15.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson? Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Let's see here. Ryan, would you mind finding the page number and line number of the mental health budget that's on? There's been a lot of testimony regarding this, and so just so that folks who are watching on TV who want to see where that's located in the mental health budget, that would be helpful. Thank you, Mr. Matthew Carrick. If you could come up and put yourself on the record, and after that we'll have Cheryl Kilgove here in the room. And so, Mr. Carrick, if you could also put yourself on the record.
All right. Thank you all for having testimony today. My name is Matthew Carrick. I'm a resident of Fairbanks District 4, visiting Juneau, and I'm an employee of the university, though I'm here speaking only on my behalf as a private citizen, not in any official capacity. I wanted to advocate for a reduced permanent fund as well as exploration of broad-based taxes and protection of a constitutional budget reserve so that we can cover funding gaps. And I have two specific issues that weigh on my mind. The first is the university. As you all know, the university is a major economic and cultural driver in our state. And what I've seen over the past several years is flat funding or reduction in funding. In my opinion, treading water is not the way that we're going to build the state. It's not the way that we're going to attract new people or retain our future generations. So I would really like to see investment in the university so that we can move forward, specifically this year in adding to the capital budget so that we can reduce some of our deferred maintenance backlog and save significant money in the future. The second issue that I care about is food security. I think that's one of the most pressing issues that we have in our state. And I would really like to see some support behind the Department of Agriculture. Over the past several decades, we've seen some shifts in paradigms and ways of thinking about how we do agriculture in Alaska, a lot of that driven by public funding, including through the university system. And I would like to see more support through that so that we can have a more secure, well-fed state.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions from the committee? I see no questions, so thank you for your testimony, Mr. Carrick. And in the room here, we've got Cheryl Kilgove, I believe. You could also put yourself on the record.
Thank you. My name is Cheryl Kilgore, and I'm the director of the Interior Community Health Center. We have a program in Fairbanks and in Haley, Alaska. So thank you for having this hearing. I'm a little bit nervous, I have to admit, because this is the first time I've been in Juneau doing this. And it's very different, although I can talk about anything. I have been in healthcare in Alaska since, oh gosh, I'm dating myself, since I started with the state in 1979. Have two mid-30s children, two grandchildren, so I've gone to the University of Alaska. My children have gone to the University of Alaska. I hope one day my grandchildren go to the University of Alaska. It is a great system. This is a great state and a great community. I'm here talking about what's near and dear to my heart, and that is making an impact in the lives of the people that live in Alaska. And that is Alaska has a number of people that live in poverty across the state, all across the state, and I'm in a community health center, and as a community health center, our role is to make a positive impact on people's wellness, their health, and their well-being in hopes that their health improves. And I think we have a documented record of demonstrating that the people that we see over time, their health improves. And we are one of the few programs in the country where you can actually Google and see what your local community health center is doing, because if you get on HRSA.gov and you type in your local health center, all this information is going to come up talking about what an impact we made on health outcomes, the cost per patient in medical care, the total cost per patient. Predominantly, our health center, and not all health centers across the state are the same, are outpatient centers, And we do a lot of prevention, we do a lot of intervention, and we see very complex people with very complicated conditions, many of whom have different things going on in their lives, like all of us do. We're kind of messy humans. And we have social determinants of health. I'm here to ask you to, because again, it's about health and well-being and productivity in the state, to, when you look at the Medicaid budget, to think about the people across your communities that rely on services out of the Medicaid budget. And if we're talking about the PFD, preempting questions, the $3,000 in the PFD doesn't come close to offsetting a complication typically that will go into the hospital. So I'm all for a modest reduction, if not all reduction in the PFD. I know that's maybe not a popular prevailing idea about how to fund it, but I think that when you look at people's health, well-being, and productivity overall, it certainly is a place to start the dialogue, because we really need to have healthy kids, healthy adults, and healthy seniors. And as you can see looking at me, I'm proud to be a senior, even though I wasn't really thrilled to sign up for Medicare, because that made me an official senior, right? I'd rather be an official senior than an unofficial senior, because the alternative is not good. We really would love to have all of you up visiting us, or your aides, or your friends, because we do a really great job. And I'm pretty sure that all of you are in communities where you've got a community health center. I'd encourage you to check it out. Look at their cost per patient. Talk to them about why that cost is there. We rely on the entire healthcare system in the Fairbanks North Star Borough to help us take care of people, because And I can't tell you how much that care costs, because again, because we're outpatient only. We have people that are hospitalized by others in the community. Those others in the community have agreed to give our patients some discounts because they're poor. We try to get people enrolled in health insurance if we can. Did I run out of time?
Time, but we're not really enforcing it so much. We don't have too many testifiers, so we're letting it go. Thank you. Did you have more, and then we could take a question?
Well, I just wanted to say, the safety net, we're the safety net, and we don't do it all by ourselves. We do it in concert with everyone else, and everybody in the community helps us deliver complicated care at times, because it's not always prevention and intervention. Sometimes people require hospitalizations, specialty care, heart disease, that kind of stuff. But we really do a good job working together, because our goal is to keep people out of the hospital if possible. That's our goal.
We've got a question from Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the spirit of full disclosure, Mrs. Kilgore and I have known each other for just a few years. And I would just like to recognize her accomplishments in running the Interior Community Health Center. It is a model primary health care facility. It happens to be located in House District 1, which I'm proud to announce. And I did have an opportunity to serve on her board for a number of years, and that was just a great experience. But didn't the Interior Community Health Center recently receive a national award recognition? Maybe you might want to tell the committee about that.
Proud to say that. Thank you very much. We actually got recognition. Health centers, the model is partially funded, between a quarter and a third funded by a grant from the Health Resources and Services Administration. Usually the other two-thirds, three-quarters is through fees for service. But we received award for 2018. We were in the top 10% of health outcomes in the country. And there's 13 clinical measures that we report on, and we were in the top 10%. But in order to be at the top 10%, you have to have all kinds of things, and you have to stay on target, because there's a lot of distractions, and it's about taking really good care of people. So we take good care of people.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Kilgore, for coming here today and coming to Juneau, and thank you for your work you do at the Interior Health Clinic, and I In my younger days, I have been a patient there, and I appreciate the services you offer, and I want to remind people that what you offer is a sliding scale, so if you can't afford it, you pay what you can afford. So I think that's a great service, and keep up the good work. And
I see no further comments or questions, so thank you very much, Ms. Kilgore. We have two people in the Fairbanks LIO and six in the off-net. So going back to the Fairbanks LIO, we've got Lisa Meath and then Tammy Smith. Lisa, if you could put yourself on the record.
Hi, this is Lisa Meath, Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm a lifelong Fairbanks resident. My husband and I have raised three children here who are graduates of the public school system and one who just finished at UAF in December. I just want to echo the previous speakers and our vision of being a compassionate citizenry in Alaska, and I appreciated Ms. Kilgore's statement that we do take care of all of our citizens, and I feel that that's what we are as Alaskans. I personally live in the interior. I don't use the ferry system, but it's critical to Alaskans in coastal communities. When my son was playing basketball, he could get on a bus. They could go to Valdez. They could go to interior communities and play. My children had the opportunity to go to camps and music and sporting events. All of our students in Alaska should have that opportunity. So though I'm interior resident, I really support the ferry system for my fellow Alaskans. I, too, have had friends and family members who've used the Interior Health Center. We also support the homeless shelter, the rescue mission, the Fairbanks Youth Facilities, and the door for our teen youth. These are all places that we need to have to support all of our students. I heard testimony in the past couple of days from Representative Sulkowski's committee on suicide prevention and other sorts of educational opportunities that we want to train our educators and those who work with our at-risk youth to make sure that we are providing them and being good stewards, giving them the scaffolds that they need when they're in crisis situations. My passion is education. I'm a 30-year educator with the Fairbanks School District, and now I do contract work in rural, remote Alaska. We have for years and years and years been trying to play catch-up, trying to attract the best and brightest to the field of education, to support, recruit, and retain the best for our students across the state, and we're failing at that. I've worked across at the university with pre-service students. I've worked job fairs. I'm involved in professional organizations across the nation, and I know what other states and what other districts are doing to try to attract quality educators, and I feel that we're not doing enough to make it attractive and then to support our teachers once we bring them up here. I'm particularly concerned about our off-road system communities when we have teachers that land in a place that doesn't have I'm working with a particular site right now that I'm thinking of that they've had lots of water freezing, not having plumbing. They've had to close school because of the infrastructure issues. It just goes on and on and on. And I believe that if we want to turn out highly educated students, we've got smart and wonderful families and students that are striving to do their best and but we need to give them the opportunities. So I am certainly willing, and my family is willing, to invest in our community and state. We do that as we are able. We supported Senator Bishop's education tax. We're totally willing to cap the PFD. We're opposed to any kind of retroactive payments because we need to consider all of our Alaskans across the state and be responsible stewards so that we can continue to offer the opportunities that all of our future generations deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Meath. I don't see any questions of the committee, so thank you for your testimony. Also there at the Fairbanks LIO, Tammy Smith, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you very much. Tammy Smith from Fairbanks, Alaska. And I wanted to just say thank you. I see my representative, Adam Wohl, there, and also from Fairbanks, Bart Lebon, Steve Thompson, and Greyer as well sitting there. So thank you for the work that you're doing there, and thank you for this opportunity to testify. It's always hard to testify after Lisa Meath. She's so well-spoken, and she has said everything I wanted to say, so I'm echoing what she has to say. But I, too, am a teacher here in Fairbanks. I've taught in the Fairbanks area almost 39 years. I've seen lots of different gyrations in, according to, you know, what kind of funding we're going to have over the years. But I continue to come and advocate for adequate funding for education. We're not keeping up with where we need to be keeping up for our K-12 and our university students. We want strong public schools, and I have the opportunity to see what has happened over the course of time. And one of the biggest things I have noticed is the reduction in resources, but the recruitment and retention issue is very, very real. When I was first hired, there was maybe 30 or 40 people for the position that, you know, I was seeking. Now we have a very difficult time where we have positions where there's only one or two applicants. I sat in on an interview last fall, a week or two before school was to start, and there was one person we could interview for the particular position. So it's a very, very critical need. And as a professional who's been working in the field, it's my passion, and it's a big concern that I bring forward. Another concern that I just wanted to point out is over the last couple of days, I heard of an advocacy group coming out very, very strong with regard to some cuts happening in the Anchorage School District. And that particular advocacy group was great to see the number of people show up and be a part of the process. And I applaud that. I really, really like seeing different groups come out and really speak up for their students. But what concerned me most is that we shouldn't ever look at one particular group, but instead be able to fund public education to the needs that are necessary for all students. I, too, am very concerned about what is happening in rural Alaska and then the erosion of what's happening in urban Alaska. I also am concerned about the one-time funds not being included in this year's budget. That just means, again, fewer resources from what we had this year and next year, and the continued problem of hiring good quality educators in our schools. I wanted to just also mention I strongly support the university and the needs of the universities. I attended the university over the years. I didn't graduate from UAF, but I certainly support what needs to be put in place so that we keep a strong institution. It's an anchor in our state. Both my daughters attended UAF, and I'm very proud of that particular accomplishment that they were able to participate here in their community. And then just one final comment with regard to the health care and what Cheryl Kilgore had to say. Any of those programs means healthy families, and it's healthy kids in our schools. And that's when we are looking for results in testing or assessments, we first need to have healthy families and healthy kids. So thank you again very much for allowing this time. And I appreciate being here tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Do we have any questions? I see none, so thank you for joining us tonight. That rounds out everyone that I've got on the list for Fairbanks and Juneau here, at least Fairbanks LIO. We do have on the off-net, it looks like. So I've got six people on the off-net, two from one North Pole and one Fairbanks. Rick Spencer, North Pole, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Hi, this is Rick Spencer. I'm just a concerned Alaskan citizen. I was born here, and I've lived all my life here. And I can remember back when we did have a state income tax, and I was, you know, thrilled when they took that away, but I think the time has come that it should be reinstituted. It seems like almost all of the state problems have to do with the revenue, and I think the time has come to reinstitute. I'm sorry, I'm not as articulate as the last couple of speakers, and I kind of have to agree with the statements they made. I think that with more revenue, we could accomplish some of the, you know, the things that these people would like to see. And without the revenue, we're still kicking the can down the road. And anyway, I just wanted to support having an income tax.
Thank you, Mr. Spencer. We've got a question, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just out of curiosity, trying to get a better understanding here, are you employed in the private sector or the public sector, sir?
Well, I'm retired, but I do pay income tax, and I believe the way they had it the last time, they could have it this time also, where it's a percentage of your federal income tax. It doesn't have to be that complicated to institute that.
Thank you. Okay.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Spencer.
I could say that I was a retired power lineman here that for years helped keep the lights on in the interior.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Spencer. Next up, we have in Fairbanks, Abel Beltito. Abel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine. If you can put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Thank you. My name is Abel Beltito. I'm here in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I am the president of United Academics, the faculty union, and I represent over 1,100 full-time faculty at the University of Alaska. I would like to thank you very much for adding over $10 million to the university budget. I would like to have seen a flat funding or additional funding because we have seen steep decreases over the last few years. But I do appreciate you adding over 10 million, so the cut for this year may not be the 25 million that was part of the compact agreement. As you probably know, I'm not a signatory to the compact, so I speak on behalf of the faculty. I just wanted to say that although we are looking at very difficult times at the university, where we are looking at potentially cutting dozens of academic programs, which, of course, will affect my members, the faculty members I represent, but also the students who are in those currently in those programs. But I wanted to end on a more positive note. Despite all the adversarial situations that we see at the university, I'm very proud of our faculty, and they continue to teach our students. They continue to put in a grant proposal and get them funded, and they provide service to the community and to their profession as well as to the university. And I also would like to really call out the students who are hanging in there. I joined this conversation a little late because I was in class, and I can say the students are very ready to learn. And it's an awesome opportunity and an awesome experience to do that with them. So in addition, I would also like to advocate for K-12 public funding, because that is obviously the pipeline to the university and to the success of our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do you have any questions? Seeing no questions, thanks for your testimony. Next up in Fairbanks is Gerald, I believe that's Keese. Are you there, Gerald?
Hello.
Hi. If you could state your name and your affiliation.
Hello.
Yes, if you can state your name and your affiliation. Gerald, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
If you can state your name and your affiliation.
I'm unaffiliated. I'm a disabled Alaskan, and I'm calling about. I've been chance to read the entire thing because I'm reading it this morning instead of yesterday when I got the message on my phone. I'm talking about the care coordination for the disabled, and I was wondering, like, if there's going to be any budget cuts on senior transportation for people that are disabled, particularly seniors. I'm wondering, like, just how much and why. What I was thinking, it just, you know, because I really think as much budget cutting, when you cut into the senior disability type thing, it just really kind of, it really cracks down on more limitations on our ability to get around, particularly since I live in Fairbanks, where our bus system is fairly poor, even though it's probably one of the better ones in the state, according to some people I've heard. But I would like to figure out and understand if there's going to be any cuts as to why. I believe our governor is trying to do everything in the right steps and keeping our budget in the right areas. But being a senior and disabled on top of it, I just feel that our care for our seniors should be kind of like a high point, because we are still part of the voting public. And I support Don Levy, and I kind of like to hope that he gets some direction into the direction of helping our disabled senior people. From what that one last guy was saying, kind of like helping our education, which I really felt talking to some people at the University of Fairbanks, just how much money they actually spend as students from out of state here in Alaska. And even though our campus is expanded due to our oil revenues, I think kind of going in the wrong direction with that one, too. I feel that there's a lot of money that comes into the state through our campuses. Even though that money is being spent in the city, it's still being spent throughout the state. So, but I still believe that Don Levy has a good direction in some places, that these two issues are kind of like something I'm kind of concerned about, especially the transportation for the elderly. Hello?
Yeah, Gerald, go ahead. Thank you. Thank you, Gerald. Do we have any questions of the committee?
All right, thank you.
We've got a question, Representative Josephson.
Well, just and I'll have my staff look into this too, but there was a public transportation grant funded through the capital budget for years and years that didn't survive FY20, and my office is looking at that. I think it enjoys a match of some sort, but it's something a constituent had mentioned, and it just, his testimony reminded me of it. I don't know if there's a member that knows any more detail about that.
Yeah, I think we'd have to look into that. Any further questions? So, you know, for the questions, thank you. We will now move over to Misty Cole. Misty, if you can put yourself on the record, your name and your affiliation. Looks like you're calling in from Kenai.
Yes, thank you. My name is Misty Cole. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I'm a 29-year Alaskan resident. I'm a wife and a mother, and I live in North Kenai. I'm calling in support of budget cuts in all areas, actually all of them except for public safety. I'm especially in support of cutting Medicaid expansion. It is an expense that our state cannot financially support. I support a full PFD payout with the original formula plus payback. If you want to make changes to the PFD, I ask that you make them legally and put them to a vote of the people. I keep hearing from legislators that we can't cut our way to a balanced budget. And I agree, we may not get all of the way there with cuts. But at this point, we haven't even tried to cut the simple and easy to see reductions. Please stop looking for more revenue in the form of taxes. You need to work on making responsible cuts to our existing budget and try to bring it in line with our resources, not just look for ways to tax the people. And lastly, I am against the binding caucus. It doesn't allow the representatives to vote in line with what their constituents want, and it feels awfully close to coercion, and it isn't representative of our republic. I thank you for taking my call, and I appreciate the work that you're doing for our great state.
Thank you, Ms. Cole. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, we'll move over to Michael Jeffrey in Barrow, and then I think it's Nikki or Nissi Sims calling from Juneau. So first, Mr. Jeffrey, are you there?
Yes, thank you. And I just wanted to, my name is Michael Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-E-R-Y, and I'm a 40-plus year of Utqiagvik Barrow. And I'm speaking for myself alone, but just for background, 30-plus years as a Superior Court judge in Barrow. I'm also part of the Center for Alaska FASD board, the statewide steering committee on FASD, and the Alaska Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee, but I'm speaking as an individual. I just wanted to thank the legislators for the very tough work that you are doing on the budget and so many other things. I support the Suicide Awareness Prevention and Postvention Grant Program, which provides the training, curriculum development, evidence-based peer-to-peer and so on counseling, the therapeutic courts. Speaking as, you know, former judicial officer and also with more input since, the therapeutic courts are a wonderful program. It's really serving people to turn their lives around in a very special way. I'm correct the support the reentry unit in the corrections, which is statewide reentry section within the Department of Corrections, really important for, again, to make sure that people are able to stay out of trouble once they get out of once they're a returning citizen getting out of jail. And the Holistic Defense Project, which is a program where you have specialized support for defendants with behavioral health disorders and other disabilities in rural communities. I was aware of what the Bethel Public Defender Office has been doing, and I think it's modeled on a very successful program in New York. But again, it's terrific because you've got a holistic approach to someone involved in that criminal justice system, and it will help to make sure they're contributing a safe member of the community. I agree with the previous testimony about the need for support of the university and of public education. I'm ready to pay taxes, whether it's income tax or whatever it might be, to help fund us and also to have sensible limits on the permanent fund dividends, so it's a more sustainable thing without breaking the budget. And I support public television and public radio. KBRW in Barrow is just so incredibly important to the community, especially in storms and things like that, but just all the time. It ties the whole slope together. It's not just Barrow. It's an area of the size of Minnesota is the North Slope, and it ties us all together. And so that's my testimony, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffrey. Do we have any questions? Representative Knopp? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Sullivan Leonard and then Representative Knopp.
Thank you, through the chair. Judge Jeffries, this is Colleen Sullivan Leonard, and I just wanted to say thank you for your many years of service. You and I served together on the Juvenile Justice Advisory Commission, and You always gave wise counsel, and I truly just wanted to thank you for that and for your continued work in this area. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Sullivan. I appreciate your work, too.
Representative Canal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jeffries, you mentioned public radio. Have you seen a reduction in service, or you still have service, or how's the impacts from last year's cuts impacted public radio in your area?
I really couldn't usefully talk about that. I think that the station is more marginal in its ability to make ends meet. Our community, they have a pledge drive in the fall, and our community steps forward in a big way and ameliorates it. But, you know, you hear, like, for one afternoon, for example, I heard nothing but recorded gospel music. And that's, I think, because they didn't have a staff for doing it. But I'm not on the board of that organization. I don't know all the details. I just know that we depend on it. It's really important.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further? Representative Johnston?
Yes. Thank you, Judge Jeffrey. Ukiapik has a very expensive cost of living, and I keep asking this, and I noticed you said that you feel that we could cut the dividend or at least have a sustainable dividend. I'm wondering, do you feel that in the community supports a smaller dividend or are you just speaking for yourself?
Oh, well, that's a very good question. You know, as I said at the beginning, I'm speaking for myself. I really wouldn't want to venture to say what the community as a whole feels about it. I think a lot of people would follow. The impression I have is, you know, if the dividend is at this very high level that is causing a reduction of essential services, that is not something that I support, that's for sure. And I suspect the community as well, but I'm certainly not, and I'm speaking individually.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Jeffrey, for your testimony. Next up, Ms. Sims.
Okay,
calling
thank
in.
You.
Thank you. Ms. Sims calling in from Juneau, and then Laura Law calling in from Haines. Ms. Sims?
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Great. If you can put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Nisi Sims, Juneau.
Thank you.
Wow, what a trip we just took around the state. We went from the Misty Fjords over on the Kenai to Uktiagvik with our Superior Court Judge Jeffries and now down to Juneau. Incredible state, huh? I want to make some comments, please, on HB 206, the mental health budget. I think one of the worst things that's happened to this state, and right here in Juneau, it's called JAMI. That's the Juneau Area Mental Health, I think, Initiative. It hasn't been good. It's only been here about, I think, 8 years. And it doesn't take much to get in there. And then you start collecting checks from the state. A lot of people call them, you know, crazy checks, and this is what the people that are receiving them are calling them. It's called adult public assistance. Now, I think it's being done too easy. I've talked to a lot of elders, and they're saying the same thing. JAMI has caused us nothing but trouble. People are showing up here because you can step off the plane or the boat, well, when we get the ferries back, and you can get Medicaid. You can walk straight to the hospital and collect Medicaid. Right then, you start getting covered, and then within 30 days, you get permanent. And that includes all your mental health. Now, do we need mental health? Yes. But do we have a lot of people taking advantage of it? Oh, you bet we do. And as far as this PFD goes, Governor Hammond, one of his only regrets was when he took away income tax. I think one of the worst mistakes he made is when he put in the PFD, because every time we start talking about a payout, they start flooding into the state And if you don't believe me, you go down to that ferry and you see what's stepping off. Look around the streets of Juneau. I know you see it. You only see it for a few months a year. And what are they doing in your town? Same thing. These are able-bodied people. They're Generation Xers and Millennials, a lot of them. They don't want to work. They don't have to work. Not if they can come to a state and they're going to get everything handed to them. Now, I talked to a doctor the other day, and he's pretty upset because, once again, we took 5% reduction in their Medicaid reimbursements. What's going to happen is more and more doctors, dentists, you name it, are going to pull out. And then the feds are going to come in and go, we're shutting you down because you don't have enough providers. You're cutting things in the wrong places. Look at the bigger picture and quit making this really into a socialist state. We're attracting the people that don't want to contribute to this state in any way or form. Building, come on up, you got free housing in Juneau. You get an apartment, we're building 32 more. It is not good what's going on. I know politicians can't say that kind of stuff, but I can. And the truth's the truth. And if you go out there and talk to your public, they'll tell you the same thing. The majority of us are thinking the same way. And maybe that PFD should go back to the way it was when it was put in, when the oil ran out. It would pay for essential services. And by essential, I mean only essential. No more roads to nowhere, building ferries that don't fit anywhere except for the road to nowhere. We've got problems, and we appreciate what you're doing. But the mental health budget is out of control. Medicaid enrollment has gone up 51% in 2.5 years. So what does that tell you? The mental health budget, I think you pulled out the papers and looked at it, but I'm not exactly sure how much it is, but I believe overall Medicaid has jumped $1.3 billion in just 4 years. So I appreciate you giving me the time to talk to you, and I appreciate all the hard work that I know you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. I don't see any questions from the committee. We'll move over to Laura Law and Haynes, and then after that will be David Hurlbut, I believe. Ms. Law?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. If you can put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Great. My name is Laura Law, and I'm calling from the community of Haynes. I'm calling to represent Southeast Alaska Independent Living, which goes by SAIL, where I serve as an independent living coordinator. SAIL supports some 1,600 people with disabilities and elders scattered throughout 18 communities in the Southeast Panhandle to live as independently as possible. Thank you for taking the time to hear my brief testimony. I'm calling in today to urge you to fully fund the mental health budget. I would especially like to draw your attention to a few of the budget items which make a world of difference for our consumers. They are the coordinated transportation services, public guardian ad litem, and telehealth service system improvement budgets. Coordinated transportation services budget makes it possible for SAIL to provide taxi vouchers and a 24-hour on-demand accessible taxi service in Juneau and Ketchikan for people with mobility challenges. SAIL consumers who use these programs say that they have opened up their world in incredible ways. For example, before the taxi voucher program, consumers in Ketchikan who live off the regular bus route had to take a bus at 7 a.m. only to be able to return home at 5. They would be away from their home for these 10 hours, often lugging groceries, home supplies between doctor's appointments, the pharmacy, and paying their bills and other errands, all while out in the elements. This was exhausting and degrading. Now that the taxi voucher program allows them to schedule doctor's appointments at their own convenience and make additional trips to get groceries without relying on family and friends' work schedules. This funding is vital to our community members' independence and wellness. The Coordinated Transportation Services budget also funds Catholic Community Services caravan programs across Southeast communities. Haynes, like many small communities, has no public transportation. Therefore, caravan is the only public and the only accessible transportation option for elders and people with disabilities. and it is used extensively. It provides means for sales consumers to get to and from medical appointments, to senior lunch, grocery shopping, and opportunities to socialize. We urge you to fully fund this program. I'm also calling to urge you to fully fund the Public Guardian Guardian Act.
Are you still there, Ms. Law?
She's dropped off.
Okay. If she calls back, can you let me know? So we have Mr. David Hurlbut in Juneau. If you're there, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
My name is David Hurlbut. I live here in Juneau, Alaska, and I have no affiliation to any particular group. First of all, I prefer to be have an income tax versus a royalties tax. For the last 4 years, as you know, folks, we've been taking a portion, upwards of half, of the permanent fund to run state government, and that's what is really is a tax. Revenue for state is or the government is tax, and it should be called that, a royalties tax. It's kind of unfortunate that the brunt of paying for these services is coming on the backs of families, children. My grandchildren, my great-granddaughter pay more in the taxes than most other people do based on what that they get out of that. So that, right now, thanks to Governor Walker and the Republican Senate back four-plus years, they've been using that permanent fund. They call it revenue, but in reality it's tax. Now, for about 1 minute, I can quote you in Jay Hammond's second book, Chips from the Chopping Block. Now, on his page 137 in the chapter known as Dividend Delusions, he says, myth number one, Alaska's permanent fund dividend program, which annually sends out Alaskan a check, is socialism. And the fact, as he wrote it, Alaska's unique permanent fund program is the ultimate in capitalism. In socialism, government takes wealth from the people and as it sees fit. By contrast, our dividend program simply gives back to the people a portion of earnings from investment oil wealth that constitutionally mandates essentially belongs to the people. And I'm going to skip down to the fourth myth he calls. Alaska wisely eliminated its income tax. The move was hardly wise, though popularly wild. Alaskan's elimination of its income tax was perhaps the dumbest thing we have ever done. By doing so, we embarked on a course of uneconomic development that generates less revenue than required to sustain it. But what I'm saying is that pretty much he was not in favor of an income tax until – he was in favor of income tax. But the way we're doing it now, pretty much the brunt of government being paid on the backs of the families of Alaskan, only those families that actually qualify for that. Now, I've been an Alaskan since 1982. I came to Juneau in 85. And I see that, I've worked with many folks that work in other parts of the U.S., other part of Canada. They pay no tax to Alaska. And I can talk about the mining to the tourism to the fishing industry. I've met all of them that pay nothing to the state. They contribute nothing. They use our resources. And it's just about time that we can have a fair, equitable tax. On average of a 10 to 15% flat tax across the board would generate more than what we take out of the permanent fund, especially on the formulas, with the caveat that you could always limit it to the wealthy of us that you wouldn't pay any more than what a PFD from the prior year would be. So the people that actually qualify for that PFD, and like I say, we know many snowbirds, and that's great they can afford to do that, but they pay less towards state services and then the families of Alaskans. And I think it's just a shame that, I can still do a better job of investing that money than the government can. And I just think that it's just a shame for the last 4 years, and probably the fifth and sixth year, we're going to be using our half of our dividend to pay for government, when in fact people that use the state from other parts of the U.S. and Canada should be paying their fair share towards state government. And you could, like I say, right now, based on my last year's my federal liability tax, I paid about $9,000 federal tax, If it was just a 10% tax, it'd be $900 towards the state, or even 50%, it'd still only be about another $1,350. So it wouldn't be, it'd still be much less than what I've been paying out, and plus my family would be paying out, than to be taxed like it is now, where you're taking out royalties, half of it. And like I say, it's capitalism, the ultimate capitalism, not permanent fund. And people all over the world that are just envious of how we can still do that, but now it's being threatened. Just like back in 2001 when Jay Hammond talked about it, I do have a bunch of these copies of chips on the block, chopping block, and I'd gladly drop them off at your office down there, and guys can read. It's a really interesting read, especially Chapter 22, Dividend Delusions. Anyway, that's my 2 cents for today.
Thank you, Mr. Hurlbut. We've got Lara Law back online. Lara, are you there?
Hi, I'm so sorry I lost you all.
I think we got most of what you said. It sounded like you might have been getting towards the end there, but go ahead.
Yes, I think I was. I wanted to urge you to fully fund the Public Guardian budget. The current caseload for guardians and conservators is truly untenable. Sales staff, the organization where I work, we coordinate regularly with guardians and conservators to help them ensure the housing and basic needs of our joint consumers. And at times, people we work with are homeless for extended periods of time and living in awful housing conditions because the guardians, the conservators, they're really not able to get to their cases. An example, a sales consumer came back to Haines early last spring without a place to stay, and it took me more than a week to get a call or email back from his conservator. And although this conservator and Sale, we've been working together since then to serve this senior with dementia, he still doesn't have monthly income and nor a decent place to live. So I really want to urge you to fully fund this budget item to reduce caseloads and improve services for some of the most vulnerable people in our communities. And we also want to urge you to fund the telehealth service system improvements. Telehealth is vital to our small communities where we have limited mental health providers and specialists. It also allows for timely nurse assessments for Medicaid waivers. And if you're not familiar with them, they cover long-term supports and services which allow people with disabilities to live independently or to access assisted living when they need it. Without telehealth, people with these long-term disabilities in rural communities have to wait months and months to get assessed. And the assessment is what gets them on the wait list for the appropriate Medicaid waiver. So on behalf of people with disabilities and elders across Southeast, SAIL urges you to fully fund the mental health budget. And I really want to thank you for your time and your service to Alaskans.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Law. And so let me see what we've got here. Yeah, we've got two people here in the room. Rachel Lord and then Paul Lorenz. Rachel, if you can put yourself on the record, your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, Chair Foster and members of the committee. My name is Rachel Lord. I'm unaffiliated testifying to you tonight, and I really appreciate the opportunity. I do live in Homer, but I am here in Juneau, and I watch you all often on Gavel to Gavel, and so it's nice to be able to actually ran down to testify in person since I'm here. I'm a mother, I'm a business owner. As I've said, I'm speaking for myself. I do also sit on the Homer City Council, but in no way am speaking for the city. I want to appreciate the work that you're all doing to work towards a funded operating budget. I believe that the role of our government, whether it be at the state or local level, is to provide a stable foundation that provides the vital services and infrastructure that allows private industry to invest and grow. Since we have a short amount of time and you guys have a tremendous amount within the operating budget, I'll give you my laundry list of what I believe is included in a stable, functional government that allows private industry to invest and grow. Rural and road system public safety, a funded court system, consistent and stable road maintenance, port and harbor infrastructure, marine highway service, public quality, public K-12 education throughout the state, a university system and community colleges that our young people can attend, as well as people going back to school, a healthcare system that includes safety nets to support and help people get back on their feet, public communication, including gavel to gavel, and living on the coast, we rely heavily and we partner heavily with our public radio station for emergency communication, especially in the event of tsunamis and earthquakes. And then also regulatory and enforcement agencies being appropriately funded to be able to ensure that they are being able to carry out their mandates. As you all work towards a funded operating budget, I would encourage bold leadership. We cannot afford for our elected officials to continue to pass the buck down to following years. We're out of that time, and I know you all know that. What does that look like when we're looking at the kind of gap that we have from our budget to the money that we actually have on hand? I believe that that has to be a broad approach. It has to be an approach that does include our permanent fund. Those are public dollars. Those are money. That is a publicly owned resource. Those dollars belong to me when you invest them in the schools. They belong to me when you clear my highway. Those are my dollars, as everybody else's in the state. Also, a broad-based tax. Personally, I am much more in support of an income tax. And please use caution when you think of a sales tax in terms of the municipalities. City of Homer has a 7.85% sales tax already. But we also, at the local level, we tie our citizens to our services. They pay that money that we spend for services that impact them. And as a citizen of the state of Alaska, I am not connected to my services in a financial way, and I would like to be, and an oil tax structure assessment as well. So I thank you all very much for your work, and good luck.
Thank you, Ms. Lord. Do we have any questions? I don't see any. Thank you. Okay, next in the room, we've got Paul Lorenz. Paul, if you can put yourself on the record.
Paul Lorenz from Ketchikan, Alaska. I'm not representing anyone. Chairman, members of the committee, I've been working for Alaska Marine Highway for the last 6 years. When we took a $43 million deficit hit to services, I've got 450 people with the Inland Boatman's Union, and you've only got 100 working as of right now. And if you have the kind of people not knowing if they can count on for the next paycheck, you'll lose highly qualified people. You can't pull people with Oiler tickets, AB tickets, or lifeboat tickets off the street and put them in, because I'm sorry to say this, but most of the people off the street cannot pass the DOT five-panel drug test. And the northern southeast communities are hurting bad right now, because you got AML jacking up the price of barges four times what it would normally cost. You've got stores running out of food. $5 for a can of soup. And I've got job offers lined up left and right for me to whether I want to stay with the system or leave. I have not made up my mind yet. And there, everyone who I talk to within AMHS is saying that they do not know what they want to do. They're scared. I'm scared for what the system's going to do to the communities and to the personnel. With that, I close.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lorenz. We've got a question from Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your testimony, Mr. Lorenz. So there are, I think you said 100 of 450 actively working.
They're out of the 450 people that are with the Inland Boatman's Union, only 100 are working.
So, first of all, I share your concern in every respect. What are the, to your knowledge, what are the other 350 doing? Are they waiting for us to get our act together? Are they moving out of state? Are they taking other jobs? What do you think they're doing?
Some people are pursuing other jobs. I'm in the process of possibly doing that myself because I've got an offer with the with SIU, Seafarers International Union, making $9,000 a month, 4 months on, 2 months off, sailing deep sea. I'm having to take it right now because I am not sure what direction this system is going to.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. Just so I can understand the system, how it works a little bit better. This is usually the slow time for ferry traffic.
Yes, so but normally I'd have at least three vessels running.
Okay, and that's what I was going to ask you. And then through the chair, how many members would you have working at that time? Would it be the full 400, or are you looking more towards about 250?
250, 300.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And I don't see any further questions. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, committee.
We're going to go over to the Fairbanks LIO. We've got three people there. Jeannie Creamer-Dalton, if you're there, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
My name is Jeannie Creamer-Dalton. The last name's hyphenated. And I am here on behalf of the Friends of SS Nenana. We are trying to save the sternwheeler and in Pioneer Park. And I just happen to be in the neighborhood. I'm not really prepared. I just wanted to, I guess, give you a heads up. We haven't contacted any of the representatives or senator in regards to the dire straits this old boat is happens to be in right now. It is a National Historic Landmark. And it's the only sternwheeler, historic sternwheeler, left in Alaska. And it's has a world-class diorama in the cargo hold. And the Fairbanks citizens were led to believe by an engineer's report that was some parts of it were wrong. People were led to believe that the boat had deteriorated so badly that it was beyond repair. And we have since had other reports, and it is the cargo hold that has the diorama is in great condition. The boat is going to be a museum by the time it was a museum. And so we are in the process of getting it restored. And of course we're looking for money, and I have no idea if there's anything in the budget for historic structures to save them. But I just thought I'd put a word in for now. And I guess that's about all I wanted to say for now. This is just like I said, a heads up what we're trying to do. It would be a great tourist attraction and Alaska historical structure. And we've been contacted actually by the National Park Service, and they are going to help us. So we feel like there's hope, but money is an issue, and I have no idea if there is any money in the budget for historical structures. So that's about all I have to say for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the committee? I do not see any. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Creamer-Dalton. Next up in Fairbanks there at the LIO, we've got Sharon Baring and then David Frey. Sharon?
Yes, good evening. I'm Sharon Baring, and I'm unaffiliated. It's nice to see our local reps there. Thank you, spending the late hours. My comments tonight are just really general. I don't feel educated enough yet to speak specifically, but just in general, I'm asking that we really fund education all the way from pre-K through the university system. The other main area is the marine highway system. It's very hard, even though I'm in the interior, it's painful to hear the impact of those cuts on people who live on the coast and rely on those. Please limit the PFD to no more than what it was last year. $1,600 was plenty. And in addition, please tax me. I'm totally okay with the income tax, and I actually appreciate having that sense of investment in the infrastructure and the services that not only I use, but people who really need those services can use. Public radio and TV, they are an important public service. Reentry and safety net, social safety net programs are also really essential at this time. And I guess, you know, just my last comment was I visited Nevada this last summer, and I found it curious that in the downturn of the economy there, they chose to invest heavily in their education system, their upper education and K-12, looking to that as their way to diversify their economy and weather the poor economy. They realized they needed to get away from the gambling institutions, and so I find that an interesting backdrop to the current proposal to have a lottery system here. It just seems backwards to me. I think that's it. Thank you for your efforts.
Thank you. We've got a question, Representative Carpenter, and then Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for calling in and sharing your testimony tonight. I'm curious to know if you're currently employed in the private sector or the public sector. Thank you.
I'm currently employed in the public sector.
Thank you.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to give a shout out to Ms. Baring, who was the school nurse at the elementary school where both my kids went and one still goes. And I know there were some funding issues in the past, and I know that school nurses are very important and the first line of defense, and a lot of kids have health problems that I think school nurses are essential for, so I want to thank you for your service there, Sharon.
Any other comments, questions? I don't see any. Thank you, Ms. Baring. Next up there at the Fairbanks LIO, David Frey.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is David Frey, and I'm representing only myself. I'm asking you to save us from the governor's ill-advised budget. We should not be draining our reserve account just to pay huge dividends for this year. That's ill-advised. It doesn't make economic sense to do that. The permanent fund, this money was, you know, set aside for future generations, and we shouldn't just take it for ourselves for this year. So a reasonable permanent fund dividend, I think, is in order. And we need a thoughtful, forward-thinking, balanced approach to the budget, which should include sources of new revenue, especially an income tax. And I think that income tax should be just simply a percentage of everyone's federal income tax liability. That's a simple method, and it would be widely considered to be fair. I think we should, the income tax would also gain revenue from our out-of-state workers who currently benefit from Alaska's infrastructure but pay little or nothing in tax. I think we should increase the gasoline tax, which, as I understand, is currently the lowest in the United States. I think that we should increase the tax from the oil industry and have them pay their fair share. I think there should be little or no cuts to current state services, especially K-12 education and the University of Alaska. And finally, I am employed, self-employed in the private sector, in a tourism business, and that business depends on infrastructure. My guests, you know, they ride the railroad, they use the Alaska roads, they occasionally may need ambulance or police services. So all that infrastructure supports business in our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Seeing no questions, it looks like that's everybody at the Fairbanks LIO. And so we are going to go to the off-nets here. We've got three people there. Julie Saunders from Fairbanks.
Hi, I'm Julie Saunders calling from Fairbanks. Thank you for taking the time to listen. I am calling to represent myself. The issue that I'm calling about today is funding for correctional officer recruitment. I was a correctional officer for 13 years. I come from a long line of state service. My mom was at the court for, and I had to leave correctional service when I got married because it was just too dangerous. My husband said absolutely no more. There's been a staffing shortage of correctional officers since long before 2006 when I started. And our recruitment isn't working. We're getting decent officers hired, and then they immediately leave for something else once they get their training. We're not, our recruitment isn't focused towards long-term. I'm not exactly sure what program we need to go with, but I believe it needs to be something that more closely mirrors law enforcement recruitment. We want to hire the people that want to work there and that want to be skilled and trained and stay. Losing correctional officers at the rate that we have been, especially because of situations like mine where, you know, they're realizing, family members are realizing sometimes there's only 9 people standing between them and the 300 people in jail in Fairbanks, you know, that's not an acceptable ratio. We need more staffing, which means we need more officers, and we need to find ways to retain them. So I just wanted to put that on all your guys' radar, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Saunders, and I don't see any questions. So with that, we'll move over to Jacqueline Cheek, also from Fairbanks.
Hi, this is Jacqueline Cheek calling in from Fairbanks. Thank you for taking my call. I am providing testimony for myself, just as a still moderately young person. I want to feel like I've not made a foolish choice by choosing to stay in the state where I was born and build my life here. As we all remember from what last year was like and how things have crumbled since then, I'm concerned about this year taking a similar turn, especially since things are already so damaged. The ferry system has crumbled. The accreditation of our university was threatened not long ago. Our old people can't afford to live in the pioneer homes. Public safety is poorly supported. And people on Medicare lost their dental coverage for months, and there was lots of stories surrounding those folks. I stayed up all night last year writing and calling to representatives. Some of you might remember me, begging folks not to let the governor's vetoes pass, but it just seemed to fall on ears that had either given up or were deaf to opposition. And that's not how we have a functional, supportive government. I can't offer the miracle solution to our budget issues, but ultimately all I can really say is that I'm scared. I'm scared for our schools, our communities, our futures as people who have chosen to build our lives here, and we especially can't allow the budget to completely drain savings as most recently proposed by the governor in his State of the State address. More generally, you just need to stop these endless cuts and dips into savings and special sessions that never seem to accomplish anything and just drags out the process. This has gone on for an upwards of 5 years, and it's kind of the same story every time. What the legislature as a whole needs to do is to pass bills that bring revenue into the state, like what some of the other folks have alluded to with income taxes or change in tax credits or something. We can't keep depending on funds that aren't there anymore. We need to have a budget that funds our public systems and protects vulnerable people, because that's why people live in a place. It's because their kids can get an education, their homes will be protected from thefts, and they know that they can have health care. Please just don't let the state turn into an impoverished and miserable place to live. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Cheek. Do I have any questions? I don't see any. Well, move over to Bert Hoftaling from Big Lake. If you can put yourself on the record, your name and your affiliation.
Hello, my name is Bert Hoftaling. I would like to say I'm not in the union. I'm not K through 12. I'm not in the medical industry. I don't work for any of the 8,000 nonprofits of Alaska. I'm not part of the recall of Dunleavy. I'm not part of Save Our State that you all there seem to be representing. I'm calling to represent myself and all the Alaskans that don't pay attention to what you're doing in Juneau. I find it very disturbing that six people in the House are deciding what will happen in every district of all 40 of you are supposed to be representing. The caucus rules that you are using is nothing more than extortion, blackmail, coercion, to do as you're told or have all your committees and the people you represent stripped of any voice that they are supposed to, just so the special interests that are pulling your strings are told to vote on the budget for what those six people have told them to do. Even when it goes 100% against what the constituents they represent have asked them to do all in Juneau. You have no right to be using our PFDs to fund government. For decades, you have been growing government, $3.5 billion in just DAHS services in the last past year. We have 12 ferries sitting out there, two of them that are brand new that had to have all the bells and whistles on them, but they can't even dock to the ports of the people that need them the most. So many of them that are broken down from decades of underfunding by the same legislators that are sitting there in Juneau right now. There is no reason why this should be happening like this. Why wasn't the funding ever provided long time before now? I hear over and over again you guys all pointing fingers at Governor Dunleavy saying that this is his fault that this has happened. I don't think he went and personally broke these ferries and made sure that they were not operating and funded for people out there to be using. It is disturbing to see that you're trying to completely bypass the PFD statutory formula and move the formula and move our PFDs into the UGF portion of the budget. Up until this last year, our budget has never, ever paid for the PFD. I do not understand why you cannot follow the statutory formula and transfer the money from the ERA, where there is more than adequate funding there to pay back last year's theft, this year's full PFD, and pay back the previous years that you had taken the PFD from us. Please take the time to reflect on what I have had to say today, because there are a majority of Alaskans out there do not have the time to call in or even know this is happening right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hoftaling. Do we have any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. We'll now move over to the Ketchikan, Kodiak, and Kenai LIOs. Looks like we've got seven people on the lines right now. In Ketchikan, Greg Echohawk, if you can put yourself on the record.
Good evening. Hello. My name is Grant Echohawk. I'm calling in for KRBD Public Radio. Is initially I'm calling, but there's a couple of concerns that I have that I'd like to talk about. First and foremost, with public radio, and I know you've heard this a couple of times already tonight, is how vital the public radio service is to our outlying communities. Many of our communities, they have limited access to internet. They have limited access, as you know, now with the marine highway system in the terminal that it's in, have limited access to resources. And really making sure that we are able to communicate vital information out to our outlying communities. That includes emergency services, news, and making sure that our population is educated and they know what's going on, as well as even things like streaming the basketball games and letting our communities enjoy seeing their children or hearing their children out competing. And some of these kids are going to go off into college and maybe into professional sports, and we need to provide the platform to allow our communities to be able to get the information that they need, as well as get the safety updates that they need, and be able to participate with one another. So public radio throughout the state is absolutely critical. I know that, we took a cut last year. There is some on the budget for this year, which we really appreciate. And I know there's a lot of important issues that are on the docket when it comes to the budget, and you all have to make a really tough decision. But ultimately, we definitely want to make sure that public radio is at the top of that list, because it does provide vital services all throughout the state. I did talk also briefly about the Alaska Marine Highway. I know, again, several folks have touched on that and how vital that is that we get that back up and running. We figure out a solution that's going to put people back to work. And as you're looking at your budgets, any time that you have to put people out of work, that is a very short-term solution that creates long-term problems. These are working-class people that, when they get paid, they're back in our communities, investing in our communities. So we need to figure out a way to get people back to work. The Alaska Marine Highway not only does that, but it also fosters economic growth throughout the communities that people can travel back and forth to. It fosters sharing of ideas, and it allows our communities to connect with one another again. And then the last thing I want to touch on is one thing that I do not hear a lot coming out of legislation is truly diversifying our industry, so we are not so reliant on oil and industries that ultimately would further damage the beauty of the state. There's lots of other industries out there, and getting them, enticing them to get up here and creating incentives that allow, for example, there's lots of alternative fuel options out there, and I just encourage you all to look at all of your options so we're not so reliant on the fossil fuel industry and the mining industry. If we need them, great, but there's other options out there. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate all of your hard work, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Echohawk. Lila Carey, are you there in the LIO?
I am. Thank you. I'm Layla Carey, and I am with KRBD Radio. And I do want to thank you all for actively continuing your support for public radio funding in Alaska. Public radio is a vital resource for maintaining connections in our huge state. Many small rural communities rely absolutely on their community radio stations for emergency and safety information, along with local, statewide, national, and world news. Those communities would be cut off without public radio, and that makes it a key state service. Previous state budget cuts meant that KRBD in Ketchikan already was bare bones on services. Pretty much the only thing we could do this fiscal year was increase our fundraising. We added another pledge drive, another raffle, and another auction. We already had back-to-back fundraising events before, and now they're overlapping. We're a small station with a staff of four, so this level of fundraising is pretty much unsustainable. There is a proposal to add some money to the state budget for public radio in Alaska, and that would go a long way toward helping small rural stations remain viable and continue providing the important emergency, safety, and news services that rural residents need. It's a wise investment in the well-being of Alaskans. Thank you so much for your time and for this opportunity to testify. And I have raffle tickets if anybody is interested in purchasing some.
Thank you very much. Oh, I think Representative Ortiz has a question.
Hi, Layla. Thank you for taking the time and making the effort to testify tonight. You talked a little bit about the impact of the recent budget cut for public radio in Ketchikan. Are you aware through your network of folks throughout the state about some other impacts on other stations around the state as a result of the state not funding public radio this last fiscal year?
At this point, I know that a lot, especially the smaller stations throughout the state, are really struggling right now, and they're hanging on by their fingernails and trying really hard to just make it through this year in hopes of being able to increase their funding for this coming year. It's really the second year of the cuts that we're really going to see who is able to survive and who is going to have to close their doors or severely cut services.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Donald Westland?
Yes. My name is Donald Westland. I live in Ketchikan, Alaska. I've been here since 1976. Came up on the ferries. 18.7 million dollars is nice that you're putting that in, but that is not enough to bring us back into the services that we need. And again, I know it's been a long, long day for you people on the committee, and I appreciate you being there. DOT is scheduling, I believe it's $365 million to take and widen Seward Highway. They also had an avalanche there, and they took and had overtime pay, and I believe also a subcontractor to help them clear the road. We can't even keep our ferries on the road. If anybody up there, if you didn't remove the avalanche, said, "Well, I'm sorry, your road is no longer serviceable. We'll just keep them closed until the snow melts." I think that'd be a great thing. I support raising the motor fuel tax. I disagree with Governor Dunleavy on dividends. I prefer not to have one, period, so that we have services like public radio, health care, ferries, road service, so on and so forth. So take my dividend until you get this figured out. DOT is also spending $12 million to put a roundabout in Anchorage. You're giving us $18.7 million to fix the ferries. That's just one roundabout and taking out one stoplight. I just think that what the governor has done, we need about another $50 million into the ferry service to get us back to reasonable service. Thank you. And, again, thank you for being there. I know it's been a long day.
Thank you, Mr. Westland. Phil Doherty?
Good evening, Madam Chair. My name is Phil Doherty. I live in Ketchikan, Alaska, and I am the co-executive director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dye Fisheries Association, and I'm going to spend my time tonight to hit on a couple of points on the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation budget and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game budget. The Southeast Alaska Regional Dye Fisheries Association represents over 300 divers in Southeast Alaska that harvest wild stock sea cucumbers, geoduck clams, and red sea urchins. In a typical year, 200 divers make landings. The ex-vessel value of the combined fisheries is between $10 to $12 million a year. In the geoduck fishery, divers pay an assessment tax, a mandated assessment tax of 7% of their vessel's ex-value to pay for federal and DEC shellfish requirements and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's assessment and management of the fishery. The 7% is in addition to the 3% state fish tax. The geoduck clam fishery must meet federal and state regulations in order to sell the clams to the live market. Upwards of 95% of the geoducks are sold to the live Chinese market. The geoduck divers spend $150,000 a year from the assessment tax to collect paralytic shellfish poisoning samples. Geoducks must have low levels of PSP in order to be shipped overseas. The association hires divers to collect the samples. Each area must be sampled once a week. These samples are gold streaked to the Anchorage DEC lab for analysis. Since the inception of the Goeta clam fishery, the state has not charged for the PSP analysis at the lab. But SARFTA has always paid for the collection and shipping of the samples. Under the governor's 2021 budget, the state will now charge lab fees. If these fees are charged, the Goeduck assessment tax will not be enough to cover these costs, and the fisheries could very well close. I'll move on real quickly to the ADF&G budget, although I had a whole bunch more in D.C., but that's okay. And under the ADF&G budget, the governor's budget would also decrease ADF&G's dive fisheries budget by $19,900. We are assuming SARFTA would have to make up this amount or lose fishing opportunities. SARFTA already pays for ADF&G to manage and assess the resource. We pay the department over $100,000 a year to do this. We are the only commercial fisheries in the state to directly subsidize ADF&G. An increase of 20% to our budget, while no other fishery in the state is paying their way, does not make sense to us. We urge this committee not to accept this cut in the ADF&G's dive budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative Ortiz?
Thank you, Phil, for your testimony tonight. I appreciate it. Can you go over again the fees that you do pay right now for the services you receive, both from DEC and from and for Fish and Game?
Sure. Representative Ortiz, the ADF&G, we pay an annual basis of a little over $100,000. We enter into an annual operating plan with the department. We sit down at the beginning of each season, and the department tells us what they need to do and how much it's going to cost, and then we pay that. It's not 100% of their cost for managing our fisheries, but it's really, really close. And for DEC, and this is just for the Goeduck, for ADF&G, that includes sea cucumbers, Goeducks, and red sea urchins. The DEC money is strictly for Goeducks, and because it's alive, it's a bivalve that must be tested for PSP, and it must pass PSP levels, and water quality must be done. So we spend We spend $150,000 a year to sample, to collect the PSP samples. We spend $19,500 a year for water quality samples, which we send to the lab. We spend $3,500 a year to the Department of Environmental Conservation for them to reclassify the areas. We spend $18,000 a year to certify those areas for inorganic arsenic testing. We spend $25,000 a year of the Goeduck money for ADF&G management, and also there's administrative costs for the association of about $50,000 a year. That equals $266,000 a year. That's more than we're taking in over the last 3 or 4 years in assessment tax. If we are taxed to pay for the PSP testing at the lab, the fishery will close. We don't have the money. The assessment tax is our only source of income.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Thank you. I don't see any other question. Oh, sorry. Representative Merrick.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Thank you for calling, Mr. Doherty. Can you tell me what year the state started paying for the PSP testing?
Representative Merrick, through the chair. The Goeduck fishery started in the late 1980s, and the DEC started testing for PSP then. We always paid to go out and collect the samples. That was part of our financial responsibility to the state. The state has always paid for the PSP testing at the lab.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. Holly Knoyer, there at the Ketchikan LIO.
Yes. My name is Holly Knoyer, and I'm here in asking for your support for public radio broadcasting. Let me see. I want to thank you, the Alaska State Legislature, for really trying to fully fund public broadcasting last year. As you've heard, the decrease in the budget was very challenging for us on a home ground level. But we've made it, I guess, sort of, barely.
So far.
And I want to thank you for considering funding public broadcasting this year. Tonight, before I came here, I dropped in on my mother, who was listening to KRBD-FM as it was broadcasting on her radio. After a welcoming hug, I was asked to be quiet for local and state news. Public radio in Alaska is also where I go for my local and state news. It's where I tune in for emergency broadcasting as well. It's where I get my bad weather alerts, mudslide alerts, landslide alerts, trees falling on the road alerts, car boat accidents. I get to find out about water quality on the radio. And as you know, seafood, water quality, that matters to us a lot here. Goodness knows, it's also where I get my election updates. It's where I go for live basketball game coverage and live debates. Most certainly, it is also where I go for music and poetry. I am thankful to be a volunteer at KRBD-FM, and I am a co-host on a music show in Ketchikan, where I've received calls from Prince of Wales Island, as well as locally, where people ask yet again for a weather update. They need to know something, they call the radio station. They ask for basketball updates, and other people call and say, I don't want a basketball update, I want my music and poetry. As you can see, you can't please everyone, and I suppose that you on the Finance Committee already know this. Still, please hear me when I say that public broadcasting connects all Alaskan communities, some without Wi-Fi, personal computers, newspaper subscriptions. Anyone can tune in a radio. Public broadcasting is community broadcasting. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. I don't see any other Representative Ortiz.
Just quickly, thanks, Allie, for taking the time to share the story about public radio and the importance of it in coastal Alaska. Appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll go to Kodiak, the Kodiak LAO with Mary Forbes.
Hi, this is Mary Forbes from Kodiak. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm speaking on behalf of the Board of Directors of Public Radio KMXT. Here in Kodiak, and we are very grateful for your inclusion of the funding for public radio and TV in your version of the budget. The loss of $77,000 from the state to our state budget last year has put the future of our station in jeopardy. Not only have we relied on that money for day-to-day operational expenses, but loss of the funds puts receiving our federal funding in jeopardy as well, as we struggle to make up the money, the difference in the cap required to get our federal funds. The governor's cuts have also affected the borough and the city council, who have then also cut their funding to our radio station, and these snowballing effects are increasingly difficult to make up. We are doing the best to try and make the difference, but anything from the state will help staunch the flow of fiscal blood loss here in Kodiak. As the previous speakers have said, we rely on public radio for vital communications in our communities and in our villages, as well as local and statewide news, the Alaska Fisheries Report, Borough Assembly and City Council meetings, as well as just some really good entertainment. And everybody needs that in the wintertime. It's a huge part of the quality of life in the community of Kodiak, and please, thank you for your efforts. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Also in the Kodiak LIO is Robin Cassidy.
Hi. My name is Robin Cassidy. I'm speaking on behalf of just myself this evening. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity. There are many items which I would like to see replaced and increased in the current budget. A fully functioning ferry system would be nice. Fully and forward-funded pre-K through 12 education, and also stabilizing our now struggling university system. Affordable senior housing and assistance for the elderly. A robust public broadcasting system. School bond debt reimbursement. Healthcare, Medicaid funding, homeless assistance, and I assume that there will be line items for items associated with the increased wildfire danger and our melting permafrost. I would support those. But in order to do all of those things, as you know, you must look at new and increased revenue. The Kodiak Island Borough headline in the Kodiak Mirror today was they're looking at increasing our property taxes, and that's just because the governor's cuts from the state budget just passed the burden on to the local governments. We really have no business giving big oil and gas tax credits when the governor is recommending in this year's budget that we just spend down all of our savings. On a side note, I would not mind seeing a bill to end those credits in both houses, a roll call in both houses to determine who really represents Alaskans and who's representing the corporations. Likewise, the time for funding for roads and bridges to nowhere, another committee or expensive study that garners answers our common sense had already given us, as well as expensive contracts for out-of-state attorneys has passed. I appreciate that you were able to compromise to pay a reduced PFD last year, as there are so many that really depend upon that money for living expenses and for the money it injects into the Alaska economy as a whole. I was going to suggest maybe we could ask our D.C. representatives for increased federal assistance for our marine highway, but I also read in the news tonight that there are federal agencies that look at our permanent fund program as an excuse to withhold funds from Alaska. The state is way overdue in finding new revenue sources, and a lottery is just not going to bring in nearly what we need to turn things around. Since the 1970s, we have let out-of-state workers profit from our resources and not leave a penny of taxes here for our infrastructure. Most of us are more than willing to pay for the services we receive, and we want those services to continue, to be robust, and to be sustainable. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to the Kenai LIO and Sherry Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 205. For the record, my name is Sherry Smith. I live in Kenai, and I'm the executive director of the Lee Shore Center, which provides emergency shelter and advocacy services to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. The Lee Shore Center is also a member program of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I really just called to let you know I'm really very grateful for the governor and legislators' support for the mission, understanding the mission of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, which is within the Department of Public Safety. As you're probably more than aware, the Council is the funding agency for all the victim service programs across the state. And just to let you know, during the last fiscal year at Lee Shore, we provided 155 victims with safe shelter. We answered 1,161 crisis calls. We provided walk-in services to 283 victims and assisted 91 victims with filing for protection orders. And we had over 3,000 contacts for additional court and legal advocacy assistance. I really wish we didn't need services such as ours in the state, but unfortunately we do. And again, I just want to thank you for helping to ensure we have adequate funding to meet the needs of those impacted by domestic violence and sexual assault. And on behalf of our agency and all of our sister programs across the state, we really appreciate all your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't see any questions. Have a nice evening. Next is David Brighton from Kenai.
Hello, my name is David Brighton. I'm the president of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association. Thank you for this opportunity to testify this evening. I'd like to speak about the importance of education. I'll begin by thanking you for and the governor for the fully funding of K-12 education this year. Recognizing that the fully funding the BSA without including the $30 million one-time funding of last year is a burden on our school district. The administration is working to make sure that there are no cuts. We will be spending some fund balance down so that we can protect students' education this year, but we're worried about next year. What I'd like to focus more on is forward funding. The advantage of forward funding education last year and this fiscal year has been a very important piece to help keep teachers here. I urge you to please consider forward funding K-12 education again in the future and doing that on an ongoing basis so that we can avoid pink-slipping teachers and seeing more teachers end up leaving our state. A side issue but related, the teacher retirement system, teachers become fully vested in that and can leave our state after only 5 years. So we see many, many young teachers come to Alaska, have kind of that adventure, and then end up leaving. If we can please make sure that we try to keep those teachers once they learn how to be excellent teachers, and that takes a few years, we need to try to retrain them here in the state so that we benefit our students and not students in other states. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last one, it looks like, is Wayne Alderholt from Homer.
Correct. Hi, I'm Wayne Alderholt, president of the board of directors of Kachemak Bay Broadcasting, Inc., KBBI. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Co-chairs Johnston and Foster and members of the committee, your support for public radio in Alaska is both needed and appreciated as we continue to progress towards self-sufficiency through both membership and underwriting from local businesses for the bulk of our operating needs. Our listeners depend on us for national, statewide, and local programming that is not available from any other source. Here at KBBI and Homer, we provide live broadcast and streaming online of both borough assembly and city council meetings in an effort to enable an informed electorate. In the realm of public information and public safety, we've recently formalized our association with the city and borough emergency departments to be directly involved in their information gathering and dissemination efforts during any type of public emergency or disaster. We consider this critical function as evidenced during the 2019 wildfire episodes on the Kenai Peninsula to justify the inclusion of public funds for a portion of our operating budget. In fact, tonight I noticed about an hour ago there were notices on our evening news about the 911 system being out of order and alerting the public to problems and how to work around that. So I thank you for your consideration and support of our public service efforts for our community, and I appreciate the fact that money has been added to this to HB 205 to support public radio in Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the room or online who would still like to testify? Seeing none, I would also like to remind Alaskans that written testimony can be submitted to housefinance@akledge.gov. At ease. Call this meeting back to order. Again, I just want to remind people that they can submit written testimony to housefinance@akledge.gov. We will take a brief break for 20 minutes in case anybody else comes into the room or online. Taking a knee for 20 minutes.
And House Finance is back on record. And it looks like we've got one person from Ketchikan calling in. It's Rachel Breithaupt. Rachel, if you're there, if you could put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Hi, my name is Rachel Breithaupt, and I'm affiliated to myself.
Thank you. And please proceed with your testimony.
Awesome. So I'm a former school board member and a social worker for the state of Alaska. So I guess I want to speak specifically about those two vulnerable populations. I'd like to request that in this budget, we fully fund our schools as well as kids who need special attention, whether that's pullouts or an in-classroom paraprofessional. And I think those people should be paid appropriately and fairly to retain the very best. And I'd also like to request that we are fully funding programs for our seniors, both the Pioneer Home and also the Senior Benefits Program. As a social worker now at the Peace Health Hospital in Ketchikan, I spend a lot of time trying to help people get affordable housing and affordable health care, and it's really challenging for so many Alaskans. And I guess the last thing I'd just like to say is, well, aside from please, please save our ferries, Southeast Alaska is, as you all know, a bunch of islands, and we're not connected by the road system, and we desperately need the subsidized transportation of the state ferries. Especially the even smaller communities than Ketchikan that are currently experiencing actual food shortages. But the last thing I guess I want to say is, as far as why in the world we get together to do this, we crawled out of caves and even joined tribes because we can, in fact, do more together than we can alone. And so I would just encourage you to continue to consider those vulnerable populations when you make your budget. That's it.
Thank you, Ms. Breithaupt. Do we have any questions from the committee? I don't see any questions. So thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody that maybe I might be missing who would like to testify? I don't. I'm seeing it does not appear that there's anybody else. And so with that, we will continue with public testimony tomorrow on Friday at February 21st, starting at 5 p.m. And our next meeting is, well, actually, let me back up for a second. Just for folks who might be watching online or on TV, like to remind folks that they can also submit public testimony by sending us an email at housefinance@akleg.gov. Again, housefinance is one word, at akleg.gov. And so our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, Friday, February 21st at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, the committee will have a presentation from our Legislative Finance Division, and they will be discussing, giving their analysis on the governor's amendments to the operating budget, as well as the FY20 supplemental amendments that he also submitted. So with that, if there is nothing to come for the committee, we will be adjourned at 7:36 p.m. Thank you.
Go home? I don't go home till midnight.
Oh, where do you go?
I don't know.